everyone. This is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. I am a devoted seeker of the Law of One and help manage the LL office with Gary, who is absent this week on his honeymoon. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites. The archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Hey, Austin, doing well. Missing Gary.
Yeah, we've been doing this show and this format for a year now, and I think this is the first time we've done it without him.
Oh, woe is us. Well, we'll carry on regardless.
I'm sure he's having a blast.
I'm sure. I hope so. He and Trish deserve it.
Well, we'll go straight to our opening riff, which comes from a Kuo session on May 24th, 2008. Kuo says, "It is easy to feel the self as a vast collection of somewhat related but not necessarily coordinated parts. We ask you to dive deep beneath the surface of that perception into the center of yourself, that center which has never been apart from the one infinite creator. Dive deep. Dive with love. Dive with absolute surety and faith."
Thank you, Austin. That reading puts me in mind of a conversation I had with a long-ago friend, Jane, who said that she felt like she was an onion, that her top personality peeled away, revealed another mask, which peeled away, revealed another mask, which peeled away, revealed yet another, and so on until you got to the middle of the onion. And she said, in the middle, there was absolutely nothing. I said, "Jane, how can you say that?" Because my impression of Jane was the exact opposite. She was incredibly talented. She was a mother of four. She canned and cooked and baked and managed a household and taught at school, believe it or not, on top of everything else. And, oh, my goodness, she had so many irons in the fire, and she was doing so many things, and all of them beautifully. And her personality was pert and funny and wicked, and I loved being with her. I really did. We spent a lot of time together in the car because she took me to a chorus that we sang in, the Louisville Block Society, for many years. And we would chat on the half hour there and the half hour back. So anyway, there she is, convinced that she's nothing but a collection of masks to meet the people that you meet, to greet the people that you greet. Perhaps many of us feel that way, that we have masks and that isn't our real self. But what is our real self? We've used our masks for so long, you know, the good daughter, the good son, the good husband, the good wife, the good child, the good this, that, and the other. And maybe even, you know, the good employee. What's beneath it? I assure you, There's plenty beneath it because we are parts of the infinite creator. Now, getting to that, to let go of your fear of being without your mask, you have to, in a dangerous word, be naked. You have to be without pretense, be yourself entirely to find that essence of self. Can you do that? Of course you can. Now, it may take some time. These things take time. They really do. The first time you meditate, it's a nightmare. You keep saying to yourself, I'm supposed to be meditating. Don't think. Don't think of anything. I'm thinking of something. Don't think. And you go round and round and round telling yourself not to think that you're thinking. Well, don't worry about it. I'm still like that, and I've been meditating for yeades, many decades. I'm not a good meditator. I'm not. But I get there nevertheless. It's a miracle. Put in the time. That's my great advice to you, is be patient with yourself and put in your time. You know, if you want to meditate for 5 minutes a day, put in your time. 5 minutes a day, that's good. That'll do it, believe it or not. Or 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever you want to do. But do it regularly. Don't just do it for a kick and then say, well, I'm not a good meditator. I think I'll do something else. Do it in spite of yourself. Instead of other things, when it's inconvenient, when it's raining, when it's sunny, do it. Set aside a time. It can be when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, any time in between. It doesn't matter what time it is. Just do it. Set your time aside. Put in your time. And after doing that for 6 months, evaluate where you are than you were able to do before. Have you been able to feel more than you have been able to feel yourself before? Can you feel yourself in there? Your real self, the naked, essential you, with no pretense, no mask, nothing of the sort, just you. It's plenty. There's plenty in you. You really have a full set of personality and character and so forth before you ever put on the first mask. And you were like that as a young child. And of course, then you started finding out what you needed to do to survive in the family, at school, and so forth. So you began developing the masks. A mask for your parents, a mask for school teachers, a mask for your peers, or several masks for different kinds of peers. And all that wonderful, joyful, real you kind of got lost in the shuffle. And isn't that a shame? Can you remember just a little bit of the joy of being you when you were a kid? When you would run for no reason, laugh for no reason, and be happy and be joyful for no reason, except that you were alive. It's wonderful. And it goes away very quickly because, well, you know, when they're toddlers and then preschool and then kindergarten, and you know, I mean, it starts early. So, can you get behind it? Of course you can. Sit in the silence daily. If you haven't done it, try it. Find yourself. And oh, what a joy it is to find yourself. Find that spirit-filled person that you really are. I wish you the joy of that journey and the delight of what you find. I'm with you all the way, guys. I love you all. Good luck. Amen.
Amen, and thank you, Carla. Our first question from this week is a series of questions that we continued from the last show, which was 2 weeks ago, sent to us by our friend JP. And in that conversation, we were talking about the concept of the seniority of vibration, which in short is essentially when people start incarnating or entities start incarnating on a planet and they start making progress towards harvest, they then have sort of priority for incarnation onto that planet. So people who are more likely to harvest are offered a chance to incarnate first. And so continuing from that discussion, JP asks, we are very near the end of a grand cycle, 75,000 years, and it seems that there could be lots of unresolved family karma. Does that have to be worked out, or will some karmic lessons or burns be carried over into fourth density?
Well, I'll have a stab at it.
All right.
It seems to me that if you have unresolved karma, that you're stuck in third density, and you're going to have to repeat. And I imagine you do carry your karma over into the repetition because it's part of what you need to learn in order to graduate. Mind you, the stuff of karma is the stuff of judgment. Karma because you judged someone to be wrong or hurting you or something. The only thing that will stop the wheels of karma is forgiveness. You need to forgive that other person. You need to forgive yourself for having that judgment in the first place. And you need to forgive the situation, though. Can you do those things? Well, yes, you can, but it takes a will to do it. And sometimes if the person with whom you have the karma is alive, the most direct way is to apologize to the person. That may bite, that may hurt a lot to apologize. You didn't do anything wrong. You were just judging, and you knew you were right, and so forth. It doesn't matter who's right in the matter of karma. It matters that you judged somebody instead of letting it go, giving the person the benefit of the doubt, kind, having compassion. So you apologize to the other person simply because you were holding that person in judgment. Whether the person, quote, deserved it, close quote, is a tough question. Sometimes it seems pretty obvious that they do deserve it. It doesn't matter. Person well and let it go. Give that person another chance. And give yourself another chance. Forgive yourself for having that quick move to judgment. But if the person isn't there any longer, then you have to do the work on your own. And it's still forgiveness, 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 being the wheels of karma, according to the Ra group. Guys, have at it.
Something I just realized as you were talking about forgiveness is the chakras and the idea that forgiveness would kind of be a function of the green ray, which would be necessary to be harvested. So in that sense, in that definition of karma, I do think that you're right, that that forgiveness would have to be found before moving on to fourth density. But I also think that there are a few different things that people call karma. It seems like karma, for a lot of people, is a very broad term to describe these sort of mysterious forces which seem to guide our lives. And karma, as Ra says, and as what you were talking about, Carla, is essentially when one person consciously acts unloving against another person, and that creates the inertia of karma. But there are other things that happen, I think, like if somebody plans an incarnation with catalyst in order to help work on a certain imbalance, they might call that karma, because it's something they are carrying over from past lives and working on in this life. And I don't necessarily think that that is the same type of karma as Ra talks about, but some people still call stuff like that karma. So in that sense, I don't think that all karma has to be dealt before going to fourth density, because I do think, obviously, Ra says balance is important in harvesting, but I think that there's a sort of threshold of balance to be met, and we don't have to be absolutely perfect in order to continue on to fourth density. We still continue to do work in fourth density and work out our personal issues and imbalances. It's just not the same as the kind of work, the intense work that we do here in third density. So in that type of karma, I think, as some people call it, I don't think everything has to be resolved, and some of that might be issues that we see with our family, that we have with our family, that are resulting from little imbalances that we haven't quite worked all the kinks out yet, but we're not acting consciously unloving towards other people, and or feel consciously unloving, and we're not carrying that with us. And that type of karma is, I think, that the type of karma that requires forgiveness within third density.
Well, but still, there's forgiveness that's needed because you're the one that decided that you were going to have a fiend incarnation. You were going to, have these difficult situations so that you could work on your imbalance. And so you have to forgive yourself for making that decision. And maybe in a very real sense, you have to understand that it is you made that decision, and that you made that decision for very good reasons. And what are they? And then the work is in figuring out, well, what did I want myself to work on? What has this incarnation pointed me towards working on? So I think there is still forgiveness that needs to be. You just need to be forgiving yourself instead of somebody else. If you're going to call that karma, then there's still forgiveness that's needed, I think. Jim, what do you think?
Well, I kind of like a blend of your two answers. I had just a hunch here, which I'm withdrawing or drawing from Michael Newton's
I
books,
love your hunches.
Destiny of Souls and Journey of Souls and Memories of Life After, In Between Lives. It speaks about families or clusters or groups of entities in which we have incarnated for a long time, and we are connected to them by this family feeling, also by the different experiences that we've shared with them in various incarnations, the karma or connections. I think with the, if we're in third density, with the heart level, would probably have to be mostly taken care of. Ross said that we need to be able to love 51% of the time, or be of service to others 51% of the time at least, in order to be harvested. Maybe we need to have at least that much of our heart-oriented karma complete with our families in order to go on. But we would still have other connections that would lead us into the area of the blue ray, the communication and the indigo, consciousness and the work of the magician. So it may be a kind of a thing that goes by stages or increments, and that if we're going on to the fourth density from the third, then we need to take care of everything concerning the heart, or at least an appreciable percentage of it, before we're really able to go on. Because in the third density, we have this opportunity to utilize the veil of forgetting, which isn't present in the higher densities. So here, we have the ability to learn rather rapidly, according to Ra, because the catalyst is so much more intense. And we have opportunities to develop distortions that need balance. So the third density might be a place where we want to try to work out as much of this as possible. So just, you know, some random ideas there. I'm not sure which ones have a whole lot of value, but they kind of feel like they're somewhere in the ballpark here.
I think those were pretty good answers. Obviously, we can't know for sure. This isn't something that Ra ever talked about specifically. But as from what everybody said, I think it all makes sense based on what Ra did say. So hopefully that helps JP understand that one. And JP's next question has to do with the Aaron Kuo dialogues, where JP says, Kuo speaks of cell memories of past karma. Does that imply that our DNA holds not only biological info, but also holds life's live action on thoughts, or thoughts, in our RNA or some other part of the cell? Or how is it stored, or what does that mean? And does that also explain why bad things happen to good people? And just a quick note, I looked up quote that JP is referring to, and the idea about cells' memories of past karma is actually from Aaron and not from Kuo. And sometimes, you know, different channeled sources don't always have exactly the same concepts. But I thought that we could still address the question and share what we might know about how our DNA works like that. Do you guys have any ideas?
I don't really know about DNA, so I've got a pass on that.
Yeah, the only thing I could add would be saw last night a news report about babies that are born to mothers that are on heroin and are addicted to heroin. And the babies are born with a predilection then towards being addicted themselves, and they mentioned that it went into the DNA, that the child is more likely to become an addict later in life, even if it's able to be weaned off of the need for heroin as a baby. But later on in life, after it's, you know, gotten older, that it would be more likely to have problems with addiction because this type of problem did go into the DNA. So that's all I've got on it.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot either, except there is just a small bit in the raw material that's unrelated, but Ra talks about a DNA connection to the mind-body-spirit complex, which makes me think that DNA probably does have some kind of interdimensional purpose, sort of a connection of our present body to our greater body, our greater mind, our greater being. And so I can see from that how maybe the DNA itself serves as a bridge between the time-space aspect of ourselves and the space-time aspect of ourselves. And I think that there are a lot of people within the New Age community that are looking at the different types or different things that they think DNA might be able to do in this interdimensional sense. And I know that a big theme among channels and New Age people is that DNA upgrade with fourth density, where we get more strands of DNA and these strands hook into other dimensions in different ways. And so that's the only thing I can think of. It makes sense to me that maybe our DNA can express past life experiences, past life karmas. I have heard of similar situations as JP's talking about, where somebody has a karmic experience, not a karmic experience, and a traumatic experience from a past lifetime. Maybe it was even a physical trauma where they experienced trauma on a certain part of their body, and then that carries over into their next lifetimes where they have health issues with that part of their body. Or similar things to that. So I do think that there's something there, but I guess we are not really the best people to talk about that. We don't know a whole lot about that. One more question from JP, from the same series of questions. He says, and last but not least, take me for example. I was an accident that happened in a one-night stand at the end of World War II. Many scenarios could have happened. Aborted, kept by the biological mother, abandoned, sold, adopted, etc. With that much unknown, and if the future is not set, and I did not see it, can some lives just be wanted and taken, and I was willing to go for the ride, regardless of the outcome? Or did I probably choose this very, very difficult catalyst? Or could it have been just my bad luck of the draw?
I don't think there's any luck involved. I think we carefully plan what we want to learn. And what we want to learn is usually presented in third density in some symbolic form. And it might be a difficult lesson that while in third density, we can't imagine having ever chosen because it is so hard. But once we get past this life and look back on it and evaluate what we were trying to learn and how it was manifested, then we can see the purpose for it all. And that's why we sign up again and attempt to learn any lesson that hasn't been learned, or to point ourselves in the way that we feel is most helpful toward our growth. But none of it seems to be at all luck or, you know, good or bad. It's the way we choose things to be. And there's such a great variety of choices of how to learn all these lessons that are available. It really allows room for a lot of free will and individuality. And just anything that you can imagine that has happened on planet Earth that you've ever heard of, there seems to be reasons why these things are helpful in the larger sense. And I think one thing to remember, or try to remember, is that this third density illusion, it really is an illusion. It's like a laboratory. It's a schoolroom, a place where we come to test out these desires to learn and to serve and how we're going to do it, and we construct our incarnations and make agreements with friends and family members and our soul group and our soul mates. And then we enter into this illusion and go through the veil of forgetting, and it all becomes a really substantial challenge because we don't have much other than maybe a spiritual inkling that there's something going on here that we need to pay attention to. Otherwise, we're just pretty much learning from scratch, and that really builds the spiritual muscle when you have to do it all in the incarnation without a whole lot of hints or memories. So I think it's carefully planned, and it works out better than we think it could when we finally get back to look at it.
Do you have any words to offer on that thought, Carla?
Well, just more of the same. It's just on and on. You know, we have these lessons that we are learning, and we need to turn ourselves to them and work on them and not shy away from them and say, well, that's too much, I can't do that. But really have at it, you know. Give it your best, because you have to have faith this is what you had in mind for yourself. Now, why would you have that in mind? What's going on? You know, you can analyze what's happening to you, especially when you have things happening to you again and again and again. You can look at the repetition, and you can drop the conclusion from that that this is the kind of thing that you're supposed to be getting until you get it, until you finally get, and you want to get the point because you're tired of the repetition. So, you know, think about it, analyze it, get into it, get hammer and tongs, have at it with everything in your soul and body, and see what you can do to come to some conclusions about it, and then act on those conclusions. Nick, what do you think?
Well, I think an important thing is to remember not to judge yourself as you're going along here, and that's one of the hardest things to do, is to figure out how well you're doing, because as Ra said, this is not the density of understanding. We don't really grasp the heart of what we're doing. We just best we can, and our intentions are really what count the most. So just give it your best effort, and, you know, keep on trucking day by day. Take one step at a time, one day at a time.
Now, where have I heard that before?
I think those are really great answers. I just have a couple of thoughts to add to that. And that JP talks about all these different possibilities that could have happened to him once he was born. And last time we were discussing his questions, we talked about the idea of possibility and probability vortices and how we can see those from time-space where we plan our incarnation. And so even though JP can see all these different possibilities that could happen, could have happened when he was born, when he planned the incarnation, it's likely he saw the most likely scenario that was going to happen and chose because of that. And even then, I don't think that the soul would incarnate without some kind of contingency plans in place in case their initial plans don't go at exactly as they planned. And he, like you guys were saying, agreed and accepted to the incarnation that he chose, and that's something to work with. And he even agreed to the less likely outcomes. But it's also possible that he chose the certain position he did, knowing that it would be offering catalyst to others in that situation, to his biological mother possibly having him come into her life. He agreed to accept those circumstances not only for his own lessons, but also to help her make choices that could progress her spiritual growth or offer her the catalyst that she needed in this lifetime to learn her lessons. And so, like you guys were talking about family groups and groups of entities incarnating together, I also don't think it's very likely that somebody will incarnate with somebody that they don't know at all and just randomly find a mom that, you know, they don't know what the mom is going to do and what kind of lessons they can learn together. I think the incarnations are too precious to just kind of have a random grab bag of catalysts that might not be relevant for you.
I think you're right.
There's one thing, though, I was thinking about as we talk about this and all of this accepting that we chose this incarnation. And it got me thinking about people who don't necessarily believe in reincarnation, don't believe in planning incarnations and planning circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think that they are exempt from being able to utilize their lessons. I think that our belief in reincarnation and incarnational planning helps us a whole lot to understand that what happens to us can be utilized as spiritual growth, and it's all catalyst for our personal growth. But I think that even if somebody doesn't believe in this type of planning, they can still come to an acceptance of their circumstances and find responsibility for their own feelings and their own place within the circumstances and use it for spiritual growth. And it still has basically the same sort of effect as accepting the idea that we planned this and we accepted it before we experienced it. I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's a good one.
Alrighty, and that concludes JP's series of questions. Thank you, JP. We have a caller on the line calling from area code 337. Caller from 337, you are now on the air. With whom are we speaking?
My name is Candace. I'm calling.
Hi, Candace. How are you today?
I am wonderful. I'm wonderful.
What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to ask a question regarding my love life, actually. Well, you know, I was wondering maybe if you see a long-term relationship coming my way or something like that.
Were you looking for sort of psychic insight into your situation?
Yes.
I'm terribly sorry. We keep having this issue with Blog Talk Radio. We're listed under the spirituality section of Blog Talk Radio, which, as we understand it, is mostly psychics. But we, unfortunately, can't offer any kind of psychic insight. We talk about sort of more general spiritual concepts and philosophy, and so we can't offer you a psychic insight for you. I'm really sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. That's okay.
Good luck with the next call that you make.
Sorry about that. We had gotten that temporarily fixed with Blog Talk Radio, but we have an issue with recurring shows putting us category in which we receive those calls. So we'll have to get that fixed again. So we can just go back to our questions which were sent in. We have a question from Matt One via Bring Forth Forums, who says, can you discuss the Kabbalah in relation to the path of the adept and what makes one adept? And I don't know hardly anything about the Kabbalah. Have you guys ever studied it?
Well, I have to a certain extent, not to the great extent that you have to in order to be slick with it, you know, to be really knowledgeable. But the Kabbalah is the body of work done by Jewish mystics over a period of centuries, and especially starting in the 13th century when one of the great rabbis started working on the Kabbalah, the concept of the Kabbalah. Now, the figure of the Tree of Life is the guiding figure of the Kabbalah. It has three branches. It has a male branch, a female branch, and the branch in the middle, which is the best of both, I suppose. And it's not all good to one side or to the other side, male and female. It's positive and negative energies are distributed nicely amongst the male and female sides, as are good things. But in order to work on the Tree of Life, really into it, you have to work on it a long time, just as you would, say, in astrology. You can't simply look at the Tree of Life, say, memorize the branches of it, and then start talking about it. You have to see what people had it as an intention when they created the Tree of Life. Now, the Tree of Life grows downwards. The roots of the Tree of Life are in heaven, and the branches are us, basically. We are at the tips of the branches of the Tree of Life. And what we're doing when we're studying the Tree of Life is tracing our steps back to heaven. Jim, do you want to talk any more about that?
I really don't know anything about the Kabbalah. So.
Okay, well, let's get on to what is an adept.
Well, I believe Ra's definition of an adept is along the lines of an entity that has been able to discipline the personality to such a degree that the energy centers that he or she is working on, in the case of the third density, it would be the green ray, that this harvest or graduation has been achieved, and that this entity is now able to be of service to others more profoundly because of this ability to love and being of service to others in more than, say, 51% of the thoughts, words, and deeds. So it's a process of disciplining the personality to seek and see and use the catalyst of the moment for love and service, basically.
And that's a difficult thing to do, and that's why you have to be an adept. The path towards adeptship is the path towards the discipline of the personality, obviously. And that is the path towards being able to be in control of your thoughts, what you're thinking, and to be able to adjust your thinking in accordance with what you feel is the right or appropriate way to think. So you're working with your thoughts in becoming an adept, so that you can change consciousness at will from a not-so-pleasant attitude to a more appropriate attitude. That is one with love in it. Austin, this is the kind of thing you're good at. Do you have some quotes?
I do have some quotes. The first one I have, which I think would be relevant to what we've discussed already, is something about Ra talking about exactly what magical ability is. And it's not, Ra doesn't necessarily use the word adept, but I think that an adept is a person who could utilize magical ability very well. And so Ra says basically, magical ability is the ability to consciously use the so conscious. And I think that is relevant to what we were discussing about the Kabbalah. Ra in the material says that they suggest that a seeker chooses one particular path of study between the Kabbalah, the archetypes, and astrology. And I think that all of these things are essentially systems which allow us to access our unconscious mind and allow us to understand the patterns of our mind in a way that allows us to dive into our unconscious and have solid footing in those waters in order to utilize it at will. And I think that is essentially what Ra is saying here about magical ability, consciously using the unconscious. And I also think that's why, as you were saying, Carla, it's a lot more than just memorizing what the Tree of Life is, or even just memorizing the archetypes and then memorizing the words about them and then talking about them. It's about the experience of concentrating on them and meditating on them and fully adapting them into your life. And I think that's why Ra recommends that somebody chooses one of those paths, is because if you dedicate yourself to one of those paths completely, the effects become more and more. Instead of splitting your attention between the three different studies and having to, you know, dabble in three different types of ways to dive into the unconscious, you can repeat your meditations in one of those systems, and every time you repeat it, it becomes more and more effective and allows you to dive into the unconscious in a more and more regular way, and it becomes a more regularized thing. And I think that is one way to define the adept. Another one is a quote where Ra talks about how I'll just read the whole quote because it's a pretty good quote. Don asks, "You made the statement in a previous session that the true adept lives more and more as it is. Will you explain and expand upon that statement?" And Ra says, "I am Ra. Each entity is creator. The entity, as it becomes more and more conscious of itself, gradually comes to the turning point at which it determines to seek either in service to others or in service to self. The seeker becomes the adept when it has balanced with minimal adequacy the energy centers of red, orange, yellow, and blue with the addition of green for the positive, thus moving into indigo work. The adept then begins to do less of the preliminary outer work having to do with function and begins to affect the inner work, which has more to do with being. As the adept becomes more and more consciously crystallized, a more and more consciously crystallized entity, it gradually manifests more and more of that which it has always been since before time, that is, the one infinite creator." So I think if you're going to try to find anything in the Ra material that kind of defines what an adept is, I think that's probably the best one. And it's just simply somebody who was able to utilize their catalyst to get some sort of modicum of balance between the energy centers. And then that is what I think Ra is referring to as the preliminary outer work, is sort of the very reactionary emotions, very crude kind of catalyst we experience here. And once we're able to balance that and utilize that, then we start doing the inner work. And as Ross says, it has to do with being instead of function. And it's more of a being the creator in any situation instead of trying to do anything and trying to do what an adept does. You simply realize that the creator is always and has always been present, and you rest within that presence of the creator and allow being to flow from that. And I think the adept is somebody who can more and more easily rest within the creator and allow the creator to flow as far as service to others goes. And you guys have any more thoughts to add about that?
Not I. How about you, sweet? Any more thoughts?
I don't think I have any more to offer on that.
Okay. Alrighty. We have about 12 minutes left, so we've got time for another question on the list, which happens to come from JP again.
Hello, JP.
Thank you, JP, for all these questions. JP asks, in the Law of One books, Book 5, Fragment 50, Carla uses the word claustrophobia, the only place where the word phobia is used in all five books. Has any other channeled source of Carla's ever talked about phobias, where they come from, and what they are about? They seem to be burned into our personalities, like they are some remnant burned into our DNA, and some very karmic lesson. For mostly, they are not logical to our lives, with no good reason to have them. And I did a search for the idea of phobias in any of the other channel material, and I couldn't find anything talking specifically about it.
Well, I was writing as a person in Book 5 when I was making comments. And I was making a comment about myself. And my experience of myself is that I have claustrophobia. In other words, I'm afraid of being pent up. I want to break free of any close situation. I don't like to be behind a mask. I don't like to be, tied up or in a situation that feels like I'm being bound into, being a certain way, being forced to be a certain way. That would be a kind of experience, claustrophobia. And the doctor said I had claustrophobia for the first time on my honeymoon. We got an inside cabin, and I went nuts because there was no light. There was nothing. We closed the door, and it was totally dark. And I hated that. I hated it so badly I got sick. And I had to be medicated with Xanax. I was in a bad way. And, too bad to have that happen on your honeymoon, but it did. My honeymoon was an amazingly backwards kind of a thing where Jim played a hero to a great extent in bailing me out of these situations that I would get into. And that, in a way, meant more than anything else could have. I knew I could depend on him because he took care of me in the worst of my worries. So it all worked backwards, but the honeymoon was the honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
It was what it was. And it's funny to think back on seeing Hawaii and remembering it with a certain amount of fear, because I had so much trouble there. But it wasn't Hawaii's fault. It was my fault. I was, anyway, it was a doctor's phrase, not Ra's phrase or any channel phrase. It was coming from my personal life. Now, as far as phobias and what they may indicate, golly, Nick, what do you think about that?
Well, again, just going back to some of the case studies that Dr. Newton had done, it seems like people who have various phobias or pains or unexplained fears in this life can trace those back to experiences they had in previous lives. one fellow who had a pain in his side that was just excruciating from time to time, went back to an incarnation where he was unfaithful to his wife, and in this unfaithful experience was shot and killed. So that he came in this life, and whenever he had any thoughts about being unfaithful to his current wife, this pain would come back to him. So once he was able to determine what was the cause, then it didn't have that effect on him anymore, and he was able to find a solution. So,
well, was the pain in his side because he got shot in the side?
Yeah, he got shot while he was being unfaithful.
In the other incarnation.
Right. And, you know, there are other examples of how people traced back physical ailments or mental predilections, either for or against something or some idea, could be traced back to previous incarnations where this was very strongly ingrained in one way or another within the mind.
Mm.
So, yeah, again, there seems to be a lingering connection to our previous experiences that we bring with us.
Well, let's see, what was it that he asked after that? After just asking about it, did he?
He was just asking about how they seem mysterious. He's just wondering if there was any channeled source, if ever talked about it. But I guess the general question is just what kind of metaphysical purpose or a metaphysical cause of phobias. I think Jim's answer is probably the closest we could probably get to figuring that out.
I think so. And Rod didn't talk a lot about the specifics of past life to this life connection. He did indicate that there were such, but he didn't talk about them. So we don't have an answer from Ra on that. But I think that he did say that Jim and Don and I came into this incarnation with balanced karma with each other, which made it possible for us to work together with no feelings on either side of being, you know, angry or having any problem with each other. We just never did. So that was a blessing when you can have balanced karma. And I guess the reason it's called balanced is that you don't remove these energies from yourself. You simply balance them with love.
And just to point another thing out that might not be so metaphysical is sometimes phobias may seem like they're very illogical or irrational because it might be an experience that happened within the current lifetime that has been repressed, like such as if you were a very small child and something very traumatic happened to you and your consciousness just couldn't handle it at that moment, then it would get buried in your unconscious and then manifest in sort of hidden and illogical ways like that. So it could also be something that happened within this lifetime or past lifetimes. Either one of those could probably be figured out by going to a open-minded memory regression hypnotist.
Yeah, I think that that is entirely underestimated as a tool towards health. Is going to a hypnotist that can take you back in time, both in this life, you know, to your childhood, and then into, you know, say your mother's womb, and then in between incarnations, and then in previous incarnations. There are hypnotists that have specialties. For instance, the one that Jim's been reading has a specialty in between life regression. Life between life regressions, and others have specialties towards, you know, bringing you back to your childhood and so forth. So it'd be good to find out just exactly what your hypnotist thought he could do for you. and talk it over with him before you got started so that you'd built trust and could, you know, prepare a plan together before you went into therapy with him or her.
I think that is some great advice. And we are coming up on the end of the show. Are there any last words you would like to say, Carla?
Of course. We love you all, guys. We do so much. And we thank you, JP, for your questions. And who was the other one that gave such a good question?
We had Matt One from the Bring Forth Forum.
Thank you, Matt One. That was a good one. Come in. Bring us your questions. Bring us the issues that are on your minds. And let us have at them in our clumsy but well-meaning way. Perhaps we can add a few ways to look at your situation, open it up for you a little bit. Let us help you out. Please, ask your questions.
We will do our best. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites at llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we will be here hopefully next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Talk with you then.
Don't really